Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
What's the verse? 13. 14. Okay. 14 and 15. Chapter 23. Divyo pakarano petam. Sarva kala sukavam. Patikabik patakabir. Vitritrabir alankritam. Sradbir vitritramalyabir. Manju shinjat sharangribihi. Dukulat shaumakau sheyayir. Nana vastrayar virajitam. Divya. Wonderful. Upakarana. With paraphernalia. Upetam. Equipped. Sarvakala. In all seasons, Sukha Avaham, bringing happiness, Patikabihi, with festoons, Patakabihi, with flags, Vichitrabihi, of various colors and fabrics. Alankritab. Decorated. Swagbihi. With wreaths. Vichitramalyabihi. With charming flowers. Manju. Sweet. Shinjat. Humming. Shat angribihi. With bees. Dukula. Fine cloth. Shauma. Linen. Kausheya. Of silk cloth. Nana, various, Vastarayi, with tapestries, Virajitam, embellished. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The castle was fully equipped with all necessary paraphernalia, and it was pleasing in all seasons. It was decorated all around with flags, festoons, and artistic work of variegated colors. It was further embellished with wreaths of charming flowers that attracted sweetly humming bees, and with tapestries of linen, silk, and various other fabrics. There's no purport. I'll read the next verse. Upari upari vinyasta nilayeshu pritak pritak kshiptai kashipubi kantam paryanka vyajanasanaihi. The palace looked charming, with beds, couches, fans, and seats, all separately arranged in 7 stories. Purport. It is understood from this verse that the castle had many stories. The word upari, upari vinyasta, indicate that skyscrapers are not newly invented. Even in those days, millions of years ago, the idea of building many-storied houses was current. They contained not merely 1 or 2 rooms, but many different apartments, and each was completely decorated with cushions, bedsteads, sitting places, and carpets. For more details, we can consult, if we want, the Vastu Shastra, which describes architecture according to the ancient teachings of sages like Mayadhanava, and I think Brihaspati was also, Vishwakarma. Maybe Brihaspati was also involved in teaching architecture, and different schools developed, derived from different rishis. So there are different traditions of Vastu Shastra. And in there, it's described how to build different kinds of buildings for different purposes and for different people. A royal palace is suitable for a kshatriya, whereas a brahmana doesn't want to live in such a place. He needs a simpler house, something sattvic. Different modes of nature require different accommodations. So, and it's described how palaces may, and temples of deities, which are like a king's palace. Krishna, the Lord, should be worshipped like a king. He should be given Rajbhoga, and he should be given a royal house to live in. So there's similarity between the construction of palaces for kings and the building of temples for the deities. And up to 7 stories, generally, is what's prescribed. More than that is rare. 7, 9, 11 stories. You don't see many temples that tall. But that's quite tall. Even a 7-story temple, it's not simply a pile of bricks or of reinforced cement with or steel girders with some glass walls. The ancient temples, even the ones we see nowadays in the south, can be very elaborate, very elaborately ornamented. So a 7-story building with such ornamentation is quite impressive. Hiyakardama, although he's a brahmana sage, he's happy to live in a simple hut. And his wife, Devahuti, has been living in the hut with him for some time. But she's suffering, although she's tolerating the inconvenience out of devotion for her husband. It is difficult for her. So, therefore, Kardama is built just by his imagination, just by his meditation. He's manufactured in the sky this aerial mansion. Prabhupada uses the word castle here, which is fit for a royal princess. It's not what a sage, brahmana, would generally travel in or live in. Brahmanas, especially sages, they don't even generally travel in conveyances. Even in a bullock cart is unusual. They usually go by foot. They go on Tirtha Yatra. They generally walk. I went with Mahamahaprabhu and a group of devotees from Vrindavan. We went to visit Badrinath in the beginning of June, maybe 5 years ago. And it took us 3 days to get there because we stopped overnight in one town and had a program and, you know, someone's house. But it took some time to even drive by car to reach Badrinath. When you get past Joshimath, the road is locked. There's a gate. And they keep it locked all night. You cannot travel. You're not allowed to travel on the road at night. It's too dangerous. You can fall off the mountain and get killed. People do, even during the day. Buses, cars fall off. And even during the day, they open it up every half hour. You have to wait in line, and they open the gate, and they let you go. So it takes quite a while by car. But we met one or two sadhus who were walking. And we asked one of them, how long does it take? 1 month to walk from Haridwar up to Badrinath. It takes a whole month. But that's how, and what to speak of walk all over India, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu walked for 6 years. Walked with his feet. That's how sadhus generally travel, by foot. Nowadays, things are changing. The sadhus are on the buses and the trains, taking advantage of the technology, and sometimes trying to get away without paying a fare. But if you claim by virtue of being a sadhu that you shouldn't have to pay like everybody else, you should also be a sadhu and don't go on the vehicle and walk instead. So Gardama didn't need and shouldn't have wanted for himself a flying mansion. What does he need that for? But he's providing it for the pleasure of his wife, to reward her for the trouble she's taken serving him. Devahuti, she's also trying to live as a Brahmin sage's wife and accept everything simple, but the nature she's been brought up in and the body in which she was born in is a royal, has royal conditioning, and she wants and feels that she needs that opulence. So he's giving it to her. And see how easy it is. We think that the rich people, the Paisewalas, that they've got power. They got money in their bank, credit cards. They can do whatever they want. But how much trouble they take to make the money, and how much trouble they take to maintain the money, and to budget the money, and account for it. And spending it isn't always so easy either. Then we think the Kshatriyas, they're even more powerful. They have political power. They can just take taxes. They don't even have to work to make money. They can just take money. But actually, the Brahmanas are the most powerful. They can live on charity. They don't have to work. And they don't have to shed blood and risk their own blood being shed to defend the citizens and the kingdom. They can simply live a peaceful life, meditating and studying, worshiping, and everybody's supposed to maintain them freely. They can ask whatever they want from anybody. Manu, in his Samhita, says that if a Brahmin needs something for performing sacrifice, he can demand it from you. And if you refuse, he can take it by force. And he's in the right. It's not a crime for a Brahmin to just take what he needs. Of course, we don't practice that nowadays. Walk into the department store and just grab things, claiming I'm a Brahmin, I need it for my service. That won't be understood. But according to Manusmriti, you can do that. I hope our devotees don't misunderstand and try to do such things. They'll be arrested. And we can see how Kardama, what a Brahmin he is. He can, without having to earn money for it, without having to worry about the engineering and the physical work involved, he manufactured this flying palace just by thinking about it. How deep his power of concentration must be. That means that he thought of all the details in his head. How to place all the decorations, the flags and festoons and all the fancy furniture and the designs and everything. He thought of that in his head. And it manifested. We sit and daydream, and nothing comes of it. But when Karma just thinks of it, it happens, it manifests. Palace is actually there. So this is example. Such persons, Kardama and Devahuti, Kashyapa and Aditi, they are worshipped as superhuman beings. Although they're not in a Kshatriya role, they are sages rather than demigods. But look how powerful they are. How influential they are. The real power of the sages is not that they can do magic tricks, although they can. Those who exploit their mystic powers to control people, they are degraded. A real sage doesn't make cheap use of his mystic powers. The real power of a Brahmana sage is the strength of his word, his influence. A Brahmana can exert his influence over everyone, including the government, because his word is trusted. He always speaks the truth. What he speaks is correct, and it's never deceptive and never wrong. That strength can control the whole world. If we can develop in our own ISKCON society Brahmanas who are so correct in their understanding and are so honest in their thinking and their behavior that they never say anything that is wrong or deceptive, they can take over the world without lifting a finger, just by speaking the truth. That was Prabhupada's program, to develop Vaishnava Brahmanas. Preachers. What is preaching? This is another Christian word. Prabhupada's using it because that's what the English language has available. Preaching. But what it means is to speak the absolute truth. Speak it so people will hear it, so that they will understand it, and they will accept it. It's what the Bolsheviks called propaganda. Well, actually, I'm sorry. The term propaganda also goes back to the Christian Church. You know, the Vatican has Department of Propaganda. It's a divine service to propagate the faith. You know, but it means making people understand your idea, getting the message out, seeing that it's heard and understood and accepted. This is what preaching actually involves. It isn't just speaking for your own pleasure. You like to talk, and you like to have people listening to you. Plenty of people are in that mood of wanting to speak and be heard. But real preaching is serious business of communication. You have to get your message across. You have to speak in such a way that people will want to listen. You have to make things clear in such a way that people will understand what you're saying. The general tendency is to not be very able to hear what other people are saying. So many people can talk fancy, but very few people can listen nicely. Especially in Kali Yuga, nobody's listening. Everybody's talking, but nobody is listening. So one who needs to try to communicate as a preacher, he has to overcome this obstacle that people really aren't listening very well. You have to express things in such a way and present them in such a palatable and attractive and simple, clear way that people somehow or other will hear what you're saying. Otherwise, what's the use? The modern businesses are spending fortunes on advertising, on letting and informing people of what they have for sale and convincing them that they need it, even if they don't need it. Convincing people to spend their money to buy their products. And they pay advertising companies billions of dollars just to devise campaigns for getting that message across. It's a great science, art. You can go to the university and get a PhD in advertising. Learn the techniques of how you convince people and communicate to them. They think very carefully what they're trying to say. Who, first of all, who is their audience, their targeted audience, and what they're trying to say to them, and how they're going to change people's minds and make them understand the need to buy their product. So our business is to advertise Krishna's message, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Not that we should study, you know, go into, make a great effort to study the modern materialistic techniques. We don't have to use those, but in some way or other, whether we do it in a simple way or in a sophisticated way, in a modern way or an ancient way, we have to get this communication, this advertising of the Krishna's message has to be effective. And it's appreciated. Krishna appreciates. Yaidam paramam guhyam mad bhaktesh abhidasyati bhaktim param mayi kritva mame vaishadya samshayaha nacha tasmad manushyeshu kashchit me priyakrit tamaha bhavita nacha me tasmad anyat priyataro bhuvi. So if someone speaks this conversation, describes or narrates this conversation between you, Arjuna, and I, and me, that he's doing the highest kind of devotional service for me. Better than killing demons or constructing temples, conquering kingdoms on my behalf. Better than that is preaching. It pleases me more. I'm more impressed by that. Bhakti paramayi kritva, I guarantee he will come to me. I guarantee that if a devotee dedicates his life for preaching, that he will end up going back to Godhead. No matter what, how he may become sidetracked, what detours he may take, he may temporarily fall down, he may commit aparads, he may leave the association of devotees, but Krishna has promised that he will come back to him. He will be rectified and he'll go back to Krishna. Krishna promises that. Someone who preaches my message, I'm so pleased with him, I empower him and I deliver him. There's no one, Krishna says in the next verse, more dear to me than him. And there never will be. Even the gopis of Vrindavan, they also glorify the preachers. Bhuvīv gunantiye buddhidā janāha. Those who are propagating the message of Krishna on the face of the earth, they're the most magnificent, munificent, most generous, compassionate, welfare workers, that's Prabhupada's translation. Most beneficent welfare workers. Prabhupada has devised this ISKCON Society as a facility for organizing and encouraging preaching. One individual devotee, he may be empowered by Krishna, but it's hard to do much preaching all by yourself. You may be a big sannyasi, and you may be able to accomplish something on your own and collect followers. But Prabhupada has arranged an international society where many preachers can work together, and a big impact, a major propaganda effort can be made to really convince people to become Krishna's devotees all over the world. So we should remember that and not be very ready to forsake ISKCON just because there's some problems. It's an opportunity, it's a facility to do things that can't be done otherwise, to actually make a major impact on the situation of the modern world. Hare Krishna. Okay, so are there any questions or comments? Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya. Hare Krishna.